34. We'll chant 34 responsively. You can chant along with me the other verses.
Evam vanam tad varshishtam pakva karjura jambumat go gopala vritorantum sabala pravishadhari.
When the Vrindavan forest had thus become resplendent, filled with ripe dates and jambu fruits, Lord Krishna, surrounded by his cows and cowherd boyfriends, and accompanied by Sri Balaram, entered that forest to enjoy.
Dainavo mandagaminya udho bharina buyasa yayur bhagavata huta drutam pritya snunatana.
The cows had to move slowly because of their weighty milk bags, but they quickly ran to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he called them, their affection for him causing their udders to become wet. Purport. Srila Prabhupada comments, the cows being fed by new grasses became very healthy, and their milk bags were all very full. When Lord Krishna called them by name, they immediately came to him out of affection, and in their joyful condition, the milk flowed from their bags.
Vanaukasa pramudita vanarajir madhuchuta jaladhara gire nadad asanadadrishe guha.
The Lord saw the joyful aborigine girls of the forest, the trees dripping sweet sap, and the mountain waterfalls, whose resounding indicated that there were caves nearby.
Kvachid vanas prati krode guhayam chabi varshati nirvishya bhagavan reme kandamula palashana.
When it rained, the Lord would sometimes enter a cave or the hollow of a tree to play and to eat roots and fruits. Purport. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that during the rainy season, bulbs and roots are very tender and palatable, and Lord Krishna would eat them along with wild fruits found in the forest. Lord Krishna and his young boyfriends would sit in the hollow of a tree or within a cave and enjoy pastimes while waiting for the rain to stop.
Dhadyodhanam samanitam shilayam salilantike sambojaniya bubhuje gopai sankarshananvita.
Lord Krishna would take his meal of boiled rice and yogurt sent from home in the company of Lord Sankarshan and the cowherd boys who regularly ate with him. They would all sit down to eat on a large stone near the water.
Shwadvolopari samvishya charvato militikshanan triptan vrishan vatsaratan gascha swodho bharashrama pravritriyam chatam viksha sarvakala sukhavaham bhagavan pujayam chakre atma shaktyupabringhitam.
Lord Krishna watched the contented bulls, calves, and cows sitting on the green grass and grazing with closed eyes. And he saw that the cows were tired from the burden of their heavy milk bags. Thus observing the beauty and opulence of Vrindavan's rainy season, a perennial source of great happiness, the Lord offered all respect to that season, which was expanded from his own internal potency. Purport, the lush beauty of the rainy season in Vrindavan is meant to enhance the pleasure pastimes of Sri Krishna. Thus, to set the scene for the Lord's loving affairs, his internal potency makes all the arrangements described in this chapter.
Evam neva satostasmin rama kesha vayor vraje
Sharad samabhavadhya bra swacham purushanila. While Lord Ram and Lord Keshava were thus dwelling in Vrindavan, the fall season arrived. When the sky is cloudless, the water clear, and the wind gentle.
Sharada niradupatya nirani prakritim yayu prashtanam iva chetangsi punar yoga nishevaya.
The autumn season, which regenerated the lotus flowers, also restored the various bodies of water to their original purity. Just as the process of devotional service purifies the minds of the fallen yogis when they return to it. So we'll chant this one responsively. Let me read the word meanings. Vyomna, in the sky. Up Brahm, the clouds. Bhuta, of the animals. Shaboyam, the crowded condition. Bhuvaha, of the earth. Pankam, the muddy covering. A palm of the water, mulam, the contamination, sharat, the autumn season, jahara, removed, ashraminam, of the members of the four different spiritual orders of human society, krishne, for Lord Krishna, bhakti, devotional service, yatha, just as, ashubham, all inauspiciousness.
Yom no Brahm Bhuta Shabalyam Bhuva Pankam Apamalam Sharas Jahara Shraminam Krishne Bhaktir Yata Shubham Yom no Brahm Bhuta Shabalyam Bhuva Pankam Apamalam Sharas Jaharashraminam Krishne Bhaktir Yata Shubham Vyom no Brahm Bhuta Shabalyam Bhuva Pankam Apamalam Saras Jaharashraminam Krishne Bhaktir Yatha Shubham. Vyom na Brahm Bhuta Shabalyam Bhuva Shubham. brahm bhuta shaboyam bhuva pankam apamalam sharajara shvaminam krishne bhaktir yatha shubham.
Translation: autumn cleared the sky of clouds, let the animals get out of their crowded living conditions, cleared the earth of its covering of mud, and purified the water of contamination. In the same way, the loving service rendered to Lord Krishna frees the members of the four spiritual orders from their respective troubles. Purport: every human being must perform the prescribed duties corresponding to one of the four spiritual orders of life. These divisions are 1. Celibate student life, brahmacharya; 2. Married life, grihastha; 3. Retired life, vanaprastha; and 4. Renounced life, sannyas. A brahmachari must perform many menial duties during his student life. But as he becomes advanced in loving service to Krishna, his superiors recognize his spiritual status and elevate him to higher duties. The innumerable obligations performed on behalf of wife and children constantly harass a householder. But as he becomes advanced in loving service to Krishna, he is automatically elevated by the laws of nature to more enjoyable spiritual occupations, and he somehow minimizes material duties. Those in the vanaprastha or retired order of life also perform many duties, and these can also be replaced by ecstatic loving service to Krishna. Similarly, renounced life has many natural difficulties, not the least of which is that sannyasis or renounced men are inclined to meditate on the impersonal aspect of the Absolute Truth. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 12.5, Klesho dikataraste sham avyakta sakta chetasam. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested impersonal feature of the Lord, advancement is exceedingly painful. But as soon as a sannyasi takes to preaching the glories of Krishna in every town and village, his life becomes a blissful sequence of beautiful spiritual realizations. In the autumn season, the sky returns to its natural blue color. The vanishing of the clouds is like the vanishing of troublesome duties in brahmachari life. Just after summer comes the rainy season, when the animals sometimes become disturbed by torrential storms and thus huddle together. But the autumn season signals the time for the animals to go to their respective areas and live more peacefully. This represents a householder's becoming free from the harassment of family duties and being able to devote more of his time to spiritual responsibilities, which are the real goal of life, both for himself and his family. The removal of the muddy layer on the earth is like the removal of the inconveniences of vanaprastha life, and the purification of the water is like the sanctification of sannyas life by one's preaching the glories of Krishna without sex desire. Om jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. We're making the transition now. This chapter is called The Rainy Season and Autumn. So we've been hearing all these different metaphors about the rainy season. Now we're hearing about autumn. It sounds like a very refreshing time after all the rain. The animals have been crowded together in their quarters, and of course a lot of time is spent inside. It's hard to go move about. We know in the rainy season, traditionally, the sannyasis, they stay in one place because it's too hard to travel. And everything gets full of mud and so on. But in the autumn season, the sky is clear. We see the beautiful blue sky. I was just hearing Prabhupada explain on a tape that the sky is blue because of Krishna. He said because the rays of Krishna are blue, because he's blue, the Brahma Jyoti, and that Brahma Jyoti penetrates all the way through the seven coverings of the universe. And that's how we get the blue sky here in this world. So whenever we see the blue sky, we can think of Krishna's blue body. In the autumn, we get this beautiful, clear, blue sky. So why is all this here, these descriptions? One could think, why are we hearing about descriptions of seasons in the Krishna book? This is supposed to be about Krishna's pastimes. We're in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that becomes clear because as this is being described, then Krishna and Balaram enter onto the scene. So this is all the setting. This is the stage for the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram. The Lord's internal potency, or Yoga Maya, arranges everything for the Lord to enjoy His wonderful pastimes. And we have the benefit of being able to hear those wonderful pastimes of the Lord. So in today's purport, the last purport, we're hearing about an example that refers to the spiritual statuses of life. Varnashram, of course, has varnas and ashrams. The varnas are material occupations. Of course, they're meant to be spiritualized by connecting them to Krishna. And the ashrams are specifically meant for spiritual cultivation. We often talk about Prabhupada's desire that we reinstitute varnashram system in society. So, of course, it's very difficult to do, especially on a broad scale. Prabhupada did want us to demonstrate it in a small way, at least. You may have seen this, prospectus, you might say, for the Gita Nagari, Srila Prabhupada wrote many years ago. And it was all about establishing a Varnashram community. So, of course, Gita Nagari in Pennsylvania is named after that, Prabhupada's vision for how to show people how one can live in this way. So it's a difficult challenge that we have. But at least we have something of the ashram institution. In some ways, that's been there from the beginning. We have the different ashrams. They, of course, can also be developed more fully. And we know on principle, as Prabhupada would always point out, this is human society. The whole idea behind it is that the human life has a goal, it has a purpose. Na devidu swarta gatim hi vishnum. Prabhupada would quote this over and over again. This verse that says that people don't know what the aim of life is. They don't know what the purpose of life is. So they don't have a system for attaining that goal. They have some kind of system. It's not that that human life as it is now has no system. There is kind of a system to it when you think about it. They have the child's life is kind of planned from the beginning. There's an idea. First, there's education. In fact, in our country, it's illegal not to send your child to school. So the government has some vision. They have their own concept of varnashram, or some concept of how human life should be organized to attain some kind of goal. So what is the goal? They want people to be materially successful, of course. That's the idea. So to be materially successful, there must be some kind of education. So we have different stages, even now, in this perverted reflection of Varnashram that exists today. There's the educational time, and then there's grihastha life, or grihamedi life, the time when people are productive, producing and maintaining families. So this is similar to what goes on in Varnashram. And then there's retired life. Of course, in Vanaprastha life, retired life means visiting holy places. Now they get in their motorhomes and they visit Yellowstone and Grand Canyon and whatever, Las Vegas. So that's the retired life. And sannyas, well, there's really no sannyas. they only renounce when death comes and pulls them out of the situation. But the real life that's structured is Varnashram. And we have these different stages in the ashram that are spoken about here. The verse is very nice because it describes how in every one of these ashrams, there's different kinds of difficulties. Each one has its own particular kind of difficulty. But if one is Krishna conscious, then it makes it all much nicer. It makes it more sublime, of course. These things become tolerable. When there's devotion, of course, one can do anything. It becomes happy life. Even the greatest hardship, when there's motivation even, people do extraordinarily difficult things because they're motivated for some reason, whatever it is, for some rasa is really what it's all about, as Prabhupada explains in the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion. Everybody is driven by the desire to get some rasa, to get some kind of taste. So if that taste is some accomplishment by doing some great thing like climbing Mount Everest or whatever it is, so people are willing to do extraordinarily difficult things, undergo great austerities to attain those goals because their attraction to get that rasa, to get that taste they think they're going to get by that accomplishment. So in Varnashram, when the goal is Krishna, then the austerities become enlivening. They become satisfying. So each one of the ashrams has different characteristics and qualities that one is supposed to cultivate. In general, Prabhupada explains in different places, brahmacharya is for education, grihastha is for charity, cultivating charity, vanaprastha is for austerity, and sannyas is for renunciation, full renunciation. In the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, at the beginning of this chapter, of course, the 16th chapter is called Divine and Demoniac Qualities. In the beginning of that chapter, the first verse lists the divine qualities. Prabhupada actually calls them transcendental qualities. And after listing them, he tells Arjuna, you're endowed with the transcendental qualities, so you don't have to worry about the demoniac ones. But in that list, it's interesting because in the beginning, Srila Prabhupada, he ties several of them to ashrams. First, actually, in his purport, he starts talking about Varnashram. Then he describes, especially the first ones that are mentioned, the first shloka, the first four lines, Abhayam sattva samshuddhir jnana yoga vyavastiti dhanam dhamash chayagyascha swadhyayas tapa arjavam. So these are fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, and study of the Vedas, and austerity. Yes, these. So these especially, he ties them to specific ashrams. So the first is the sannyasis. They're supposed to cultivate fearlessness. As Prabhupada generally think, at least I've always remembered where Prabhupada says, because the sannyasi has to go into the forest, so he can't be afraid that, oh, tigers are going to come and eat me, or snakes going to come and get me, or whatever, traveling in the jungle. So that's part of it, fear of that kind of danger that's available for that's there, presents itself for the traveling sannyasi. But there's also just the fear of one's maintenance. What am I going to do now? I don't have my job anymore. How am I going to maintain myself? So the sannyasi also has to be fearless in that. And there are two items of surrender. That one is that Krishna is the protector, and one is that Krishna is the guardian. One should always feel that way. Because what does a superior do? What do parents do? They protect the child, but they also feed the child. So the sannyasi has to have realization that Krishna is going to feed me and Krishna is going to protect me. So this fearlessness is especially meant to be cultivated by the sannyasi. And purification of one's existence, of course, sannyas is meant for full focus on that. There's no other business than purifying oneself, concentrating on that, especially with the idea that, well, death is approaching. The signs are there, so I have to prepare myself very seriously. This is going to come. So that becomes very focused. Whereas in the Grihastha Ashram, there are so many distractions, you can say. In the sannyasa ashram, one is very focused on this. And then the third thing for the sannyasi is cultivation of spiritual knowledge. So again, the sannyasi is very focused on studying the scriptures. But Srila Prabhupada, in the context of this, he says, and especially for spreading that knowledge, not just for learning it himself, but for spreading Krishna consciousness, he says that the sannyasi should be learned in the philosophy, and then they should preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. So that makes them, of course, that makes them happy, as we read in this purport today, that when one is preaching Krishna consciousness, someone becomes very happy and enlivened. So then the next ones that are listed, and then the charity is listed, dhanam. So the householders, of course, the householders are the only ones that are earning anything. The grihasthas, the vanaprasthas, and the sannyasis, they don't earn any livelihood. So the grihasthas are supposed to maintain all of the other ashrams. And of course, all of these qualities, they're meant really for everyone. They're meant for devotees. Many of these are included in the 26 qualities of a devotee. So everyone should have a charitable disposition. Of course, the devotee's charity, especially, is to give Krishna consciousness. Sometimes people would ask Srila Prabhupada, what are you doing? What kind of charitable works do you do? Does your movement do? So Prabhupada's answer was, we are educating. This is the great charity. We're giving people knowledge of Krishna. What greater gift is there than that? And there's that verse about Lord Chaitanya. If you're interested in logic, then apply your logic to Lord Chaitanya, and you'll see that he's the most munificent person. He's the one who's giving the greatest gift to all of society. So the householders, of course, in our movement, householders, it's not that they're only the sannyasis preach, but householders also preach. So their charity is also demonstrated in that way. So the other is... Dhamma is self-control. Of course, that's also for all of the ashramas. But in household life, because of the situation, one has to be careful to control his senses and live a regulated life. And yajna, performance of sacrifice. Now, of course, in this age, there's not sacrifice. Traditionally, the householders would have fire sacrifices. How it's mentioned, because they're in maintaining a household, there are different sinful activities that one performs while cooking and so on, killing living entities. So one is supposed to perform certain kinds of sacrifices to become free from that. But of course, our sacrifice is chanting the holy names. So many places Prabhupada talks about how householders can live at home, but in the morning and evening they should study Vedic literature and they should perform kirtan with their family. There's one place in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in one purport, where Prabhupada says one should invite other people, neighbors, and guests to come every evening and hold kirtan for 3 hours in one's home. That's a pretty long kirtan. So every evening, that was Prabhupada's recommendation. You want to purify your household, then have 3 hours of kirtan every night. So that's the sacrifice that the householders perform. That's the householders are meant to perform sacrifice, and for us, of course, there's that sacrifice. And then the swadhyaya, that's especially the brahmacharis. That's their business. Of course, a brahmachari serves the spiritual master just like a humble servant. Dasavat. Dasa. Of course, we're also all given the names. Dasa or Dasi. When we take a spiritual master, take initiation, then we become the das. We become the servant of the spiritual master, and our lives are dedicated to the spiritual master. But especially the brahmachari, it's very evident what's going on with the brahmachari moving into the ashram of the spiritual master, young boys traditionally. So everything is done under the order of the spiritual master, and especially chanting. We heard earlier about how the sound, I forget what it was compared to, the sounds of the crickets or something, was like the boys in the morning chanting the mantras. In the traditional Gurukul, that so much memorization went on. I heard that when in learning Sanskrit, the traditional way was to learn shlokas and all the grammatical rules. There's hundreds and hundreds of shlokas, and all the grammatical rules are there in the shlokas. Actually, it's a nice way to learn things because it's like poetry, and it's easier to memorize. Everything is encoded in these shlokas. So they would memorize every day, every morning, they would chant. And of course, chant Vedic mantras also. So they learn so many things, and they become part of them at an early age. It's very nice. And they learn very easily. I had an ashram for 1 year, and the boys were chanting in the morning Bhagavad Gita, and they quickly learned the verse just by hearing them and reciting them. They could pick them up very quickly. So they stick in the mind as long as one keeps up that practice. So then there's austerity. So austerity is meant for the vanaprastha. Now one thing we find when we study Srila Prabhupada's books is that a lot of times when we read about varnashram, we think, well, does this have to do with us? Well, how much of this has to do with us? And some of it seems like what Prabhupada is talking about is progressions for people who are kind of in maya, you might say. They're really, maybe they're karmis, and they have to take vanaprastha because they've been in so much maya in grihastha life that they have to get out of it, because there's been so little Krishna consciousness or spiritual life. They've been so absorbed in material affairs and also involved in sense gratification. So they have to get rid of that in a very stark way. If you read about vanaprastha life in the Bhagavatam, it means dressing in tree bark. I've never quite figured out how that works. Maybe you make little splinters out of it or somehow weave something. I'm not sure. I have to try it sometime, I guess. The dressing in tree bark and not taking care of the hair, because household life means, yeah, of course, you have to look nice. You have to get manicures and pedicures and your hair done and so on. And the hair, in vanaprastha, the hair just gets all matted. And you just eat roots. And we're reading today about in the rainy season, the roots become soft. So that's nice. I guess you have to learn what to eat so you don't eat the poison thing. You eat fruits and roots and just live extreme austerity. Of course, this is also gradually. In fact, there's one purport where Prabhupada explains how each of these, there's four stages of brahmacharya, four stages of grihastha, four stages of vanaprastha, and four stages of sannyasa. So as you read those for today, you think, well, this is really from another time that these kinds of things went on. But it can be gradual. In fact, Prabhupada says in vanaprastha life, the wife can also come into the forest. Vanaprastha means one who stays in the forest. So Prabhupada says the wife can also come along and perform the austerities with the husband in the forest. And then in other places he says that vanaprastha means to, of course, detach oneself from family connections gradually. And then finally, there's sannyas, of course. Now, one thing I was saying about, you know, how much do these apply to us, I always look for where does Prabhupada say, you know, the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness should do this or that, where he's very specific about it. So there is one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Prabhupada says the members of, I think he says the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, or maybe he says this Krishna Consciousness movement. But he says there, he says we have many grihasthas and they are supposed to take vanaprastha, he says, later in life. And then the husband can take sannyas, he says, in that particular purport. So he says they're supposed to take vanaprastha and the husband can take sannyas. So again, all of these different qualities, they're meant to be cultivated. We're all meant to cultivate austerity, tapo divyam. That's human life, is to cultivate austerity, maybe not to the extreme that we read about in the Bhagavatam. We're all meant, even if we're not, whether we're brahmacharis or sannyasis or grihasthas or vanaprasthas, we're meant to study the Vedic literature. That's so essential to our Krishna consciousness that makes us successful in all of those things. I had actually forgotten this purport. I want to read something. I just came across it the other day, and I said, oh yeah, I remember that now. Prabhupada says something in one purport, quite astonishing, I guess you might say. There's a nice, this is in the Madhya Lila chapter 25, toward the end of it, verse 278. So Krishnadas Kaviraj is talking about how the devotees are drinking the nectar of the topics of Krishna and become very happy by that. By the mercy of the pure devotees, whoever tastes them can understand the depths of that sweetness. So it's talking about the nectar of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. So this is the translation. Men become strong and stout by eating sufficient grains, but the devotee who simply eats ordinary grains but does not taste the transcendental pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna gradually becomes weak and falls down from the transcendental position. However, if one drinks but a drop of the nectar of Krishna's pastimes, his body and mind begin to bloom and he begins to laugh, sing and dance. And Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, all the devotees connected with this Krishna consciousness movement must read all the books that have been translated, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and others. Otherwise, after some time, they will simply eat, sleep, and fall down from their position. Thus, they will miss the opportunity to attain an eternal blissful life of transcendental pleasure. So this is a mood. If you listen to Prabhupada's lectures, you'll find it over and over and over again. I was thinking how now when we give classes, we have to try to come up with new things because devotees have all heard it before, and we have to quote the Goswami's literatures and so on. You listen to Prabhupada's lectures, and over and over and over again, he talks about not wasting the human form of life. How it's just animal life, if your just business is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Practically every lecture he talks about that. It's amazing. But of course, what comes through with Prabhupada is he's so ecstatic, emphatic about it. He's so enlivened in saying it. And so he's pleading with us, practically. You can hear in his voice, he's pleading. Not only us, but everyone, of course. One thing is when Prabhupada gave lectures, there tended to be not just devotees there. Other people would come. They would bring their friends, or just because the acharya, the big guru, is coming, other people would come. So he would often be speaking to those people too. But that's what we would hear that theme over and over in Srila Prabhupada's lectures, just pleading, take advantage of the human form of life. Take this seriously. And of course he would say it to us too. Take it seriously. Don't waste a moment. So that's what this is all about, this Varnashram. And these ashrams, that's why we have ashrams. Ashram is for cultivation of spiritual life, and we're meant to be situated in them. And in all of them, we all have, of course, we're reading some specific instructions for different ashrams, but they're over and over again, Prabhupada gave so many instructions for us to all advance side by side in Krishna consciousness and become enlivened and move forward towards a goal of life. So I guess there's lots of verses I won't read. I'll just read this last translation. Autumn cleared the sky of clouds, let the animals get out of their crowded living conditions, cleaned the earth of its covering of mud, and purified the water of contamination. In the same way that loving service rendered to Lord Krishna frees the members of the four spiritual orders from their respective troubles. So any questions? I have only a few minutes left. Questions or comments? Dr. Vikram Prabhu?
And so Gandhari went with him. I think Kunti also. But he would eventually leave his body through mystical yoga. But she was burnt up in a forest fire, something like that. Gandhari, you know?
Yeah, we have some examples of Vanaprastha. Of course, in traditional Vedic society, only certain persons took sannyas. The Brahmins took sannyas, basically. And the others, but the others would go to the forest. In fact, there's a lot of Vedic literature that's written specifically for those who have retired to the forest, instructions for them. And there it talks about, you know, perfection in Vanaprastha life and so on. So generally many people would leave, even though they didn't officially take sannyas, they would go to the forest. So even the ladies, as we see in the Bhagavatam, there are examples. Draupadi and Kunti and others, Gandhari, she followed her husband and so on. And yeah, they performed the mystic process of returning the elements of the body to the reservoir of elements, but we just chant Hare Krishna. Madamati Prabhu?
Slight difference, Prabhupada's lectures compared, like from 1968 till, you know, 1977.
Yeah, the audience does make some difference. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the book that Prabhupada's reading from, so yeah, he does speak differently. I happen to be listening recently to a lot of like 1972 lectures in India and other places. So, yeah, Prabhupada would, and of course, Prabhupada also, he would have things on his mind that were going on in his movement, and sometimes those would come out. So he would, but still, that sense of urgency was always there in all of his. It was very rare that a class was like. Sometimes we give a class and it's sort of like academic, you might say. We're giving a lot of information, but Prabhupada was more, you know, how can I convince these people to be serious about Krishna consciousness? It really came out so much. But he would, of course, explain things. And sometimes I come across, recently I talked about how our impressions from the past are called samskars. And I was thinking how Prabhupada never referred to them that way. But I actually get this because somebody asked Prabhupada about it in a lecture. Somebody had an idea that this Indian man was saying, well, your students, because Prabhupada would always say, look at my students, they've done it, why can't you do it? That kind of thing. So, but some Indian man said, well, they're doing this because of their samskar. In other words, it means they have an inclination because of their karma. So I never heard Prabhupada use the word samskar, but he knew exactly what the man was talking about. So he would use his certain language, but he knew when it was almost like if the person spoke in a certain way, Prabhupada would sometimes change his vocabulary and approach it in a slightly different way. It was amazing, actually, how Prabhupada knew about so many different things, and they would come out at certain times. But sometimes, you know, in all of Prabhupada's lecture, maybe one time you'll hear him talk about some particular thing. So there's a lot there, really. I mean, if you listen to lots of Prabhupada's lectures, definitely you'll get a lot of information. That's there for sure. But that sense of urgency was continued all the way through, of course, up to Prabhupada's final breath. He was imploring us to be serious about Krishna consciousness and take it seriously. But yeah, it's nice to listen to. Listen to the 1966 lecture and listen to a 1977 lecture. And it even seemed to me that Prabhupada pronounced Krishna a little bit differently in the beginning than he did later. His association with us Westerners changed his pronunciation a little bit. Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. She's Indian, she can tell though. His accent changed. One thing that's interesting, you know, I'm sure many of you never thought of this before, but Prabhupada spoke Sanskrit with a Bengali accent. Yeah. It sounds funny to us Westerners, but definitely it's true, right? And of course, Prabhupada went back and forth between Bengali and Sanskrit. He would kind of speak from one to the other, both ways. So, anyway. So Prabhupada, of course, yes, that's true. In some ways, he was influenced by what he was doing. He was responding to what was happening in his movement. And he was sometimes fine-tuning his message for his particular audience. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.